Welcome to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series. You're listening to It's the Law.
Hello, and welcome to It's the Law. I'm Seth Abrams. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the expression, buyer beware. Unfortunately, when we purchase goods or services, we don't always get what we paid for. Fortunately, there are laws, regulations, and different kinds of contracts that protect us as consumers, but we have to know what they are. To help us better understand our rights as consumers, I'm joined today by consumer rights advocate Julia Hutchinson, who will be taking your calls and emails. Julia, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me.
What do you think is the single most important thing for consumers to keep in mind when purchasing goods or services?
Well, I would say that the single most important thing to keep in mind is that we as consumers have to educate ourselves about the goods or services we are purchasing before we purchase them. We need to do our homework, Seth. This means knowing as much as possible about the actual product and the manufacturer or what the service involves. It means checking out the reputation of the seller or the store. It means doing comparison pricing. Making informed decisions about what we buy can avoid all kinds of problems down the road.
There are certain obligations buyers have even after making a purchase, correct?
Oh, absolutely. If the product you purchase comes with an owner's manual, you're obligated to read it and to know how to operate the product properly. If you use it improperly, it's not the fault of the seller or the manufacturer. It's your fault. Failing to use a product as directed will also, in most cases, nullify the contract or the warranty and prevent you from recovering any losses.
Great point. We have a call from Amanda in Gainesville, Florida. Amanda, you have a question for Julia?
Hi, Julia. I keep hearing the term good faith when it comes to certain business transactions and practices, but I'm confused because it seems like one person's idea of good faith is different from somebody else's. Can you please clarify this for me?
That's a good question, Amanda. Good faith implies that both parties entering into a sales contract must treat each other fairly. But as you pointed out, people sometimes have very different ideas about what's fair and what isn't. Let me just give you an example. If I own a chicken farm and I sell 25 hens to an egg farmer down the road, that farmer is buying my hens with a reasonable expectation that they will lay eggs. He bought my hens in good faith. If they don't lay eggs, then that farmer has every right to return those hens to me and ask for his money back.
But it's not your fault the chickens didn't lay eggs.
But it is my fault, essentially. First of all, I should be expected to know if those hens lay eggs and not sell them if they don't. But let's assume that I didn't know. I'm still responsible for remedying the situation because my neighbor and I entered into a good faith agreement. So, of all three parties, that would be me, those hens, and the farmer who bought those hens, the farmer who bought the hens is the one who is completely without fault and the one who is protected by law because he bought the hens in good faith.
Okay, thanks, Amanda. Okay, I want to read an email from Lee in Seattle. Lee writes, I recently bought a used iPod from a kid at school. It worked for one day and then crashed. It still doesn't work. When I told him it wasn't working and that I wanted my money back, he said I must have damaged it and he won't take it back and return my money. Am I just out $100 or is there something I can do? We've got Lee on the phone. Julia, what do you think about Lee's situation?
Well, hey, Lee, because the purchase amount was less than $500, you essentially do have a sales contract. With purchases over $500, a contract must, with very few exceptions, be in writing to be enforceable. But if a purchase is $500 or less, an oral or verbal sales contract is enforceable. Now, if he told you the iPod worked and it didn't, and as long as you did make him aware of this in a timely manner.
I called and emailed him the same day.
Fine. Well, then you do have a contract. Did you save all of your emails? That's good, because unfortunately, you may have to go to small claims court to remedy this situation, and you're going to want those emails as proof that you notified him that the iPod didn't work. So, Lee, essentially, the good news is that you do have rights here, and you are indeed in the right. But the bad news is you may have to go through some hassle to have those rights enforced.
I hope you can work it out, Lee. Thanks for calling. We'll be right back after a quick break. Keep listening.
You're listening to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series.
Hello, and we're back with consumer rights advocate Julia Hutchinson, and we have a call from Dante in Riverside, California. Dante, go ahead. You're on It's the Law.
Yeah, I was at an auto show on Sunday, and I bought a stereo for my truck. When I tried to install it, it didn't fit, and I found another one I like better online that I want to buy. Now, my uncle says I'm stuck with it because the auto show is over, but my dad says that because the guys who sold me the stereo also have a store in town, and because this is only Tuesday, something called the cooling off rule applies if I return it to the store right away. Who's right? And what is the cooling off rule anyway?
Well, Dante, I hate to tell you, but your father is right. The cooling off rule applies to any transaction made someplace other than the seller's normal place of business. That would be like a flea market or a fair or, in this case, the auto show. Now, the rule, which applies to purchases of $25 or more, gives you 3 business days to cancel the transaction. But they should have told you that when you made the purchase. So now, assuming the stereo is in the same condition that it was in when you bought it, just take it back to the store along with your receipt, and they are, by law, required to refund your money.
Okay, Julia, I have a question about something that is slowly driving me and millions of others, I'm sure, completely crazy. Telemarketers, they're relentless.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing you can do is to get on the National Do Not Call Registry. You can register for it online, and once you're on it, most telemarketers can't call you for 5 years. There's also this thing called the telemarketer's sales rule, which protects you from abusive people trying to sell you goods and services over the telephone. In fact, it protects you from being called at all if you've asked not to be called. Telemarketers are also, by law, obliged to tell you that they're making a sales call, the name of the company they represent, and all that before they launch into their sales pitch.
Okay. We have time for one last email. This is from Sebastian in Stowe, Vermont. And Sebastian writes, I ordered some CDs online over a month ago and they still haven't arrived. I called the customer service line and they said it could take up to 60 days. Now I don't even want them anymore. Can I cancel the order?
Well, Sebastian, the answer is a resounding maybe. If when placing the order, the company stated that it could take up to 60 days for them to deliver the CDs, then you agreed to that when you made the purchase, whether you were aware of it or not. If, however, there is no delivery time stated, then the FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, requires that any goods ordered via the internet, telephone, mail, or fax be sent within 30 days from the time the order's placed. If the goods are not sent within that 30 days, then the customer has the right to cancel the order and receive a refund. My hunch is that in Sebastian's case, that 60-day delivery was hidden in the fine print and he just wasn't aware of it. So the lesson here, Seth, is always, always read that fine print.
Buyer beware.
Yeah.
That's the theme we started with on today's show and a great place to end. Julia Hutchinson, thank you for your time today and for all this great information.
Well, it was my pleasure to be here. I would like to add one last thought, if I may, Seth. Consumers need to know that there are laws and rules in place to protect them, and agencies exist to help. So if you feel you're being cheated, start by going to the company first and voicing your complaint. Very often, you can find a remedy there if you go to the right person or the right department. Now, if that doesn't work, you should make a formal complaint with your local Better Business Bureau, or BBB. Now, the BBB can't force businesses to do the right thing, but at least other consumers might benefit from your bad experience in the future. Unfortunately, the only real remedy is going to court, but that's a whole other show. Now, I can't stress this enough. Y'all, do your homework first, before you buy anything. An informed consumer is, more often than not, a happy and satisfied consumer.
More great advice. Thank you again, Julia. And as always, thank you for listening. Remember to tune in again to It's the Law.
You've been listening to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series.